Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD.
Kumate, 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 kumate. Greatest lyrics to the greatest song ever written.
Might be. Or the Are You That? And man, I am looking forward to jumping into the episode this week. Before we get into Bloodsport, though, I want to take a second to plug our podcast here. If you're new to the show, or maybe just listening for the first time and found this through a search, we want to thank you guys for hitting that download button. You can subscribe to us for free on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, CastBox, and YouTube. Make sure you turn on that bell notification on YouTube, so every time we go live or post a video, you're going to get notified right away. That doesn't cost you anything, and it doesn't cost you anything but your time to drop us a 5-star review, give us a little feedback, and that's also going to help us continue to grow and gain new listeners every single week. So, JD, let's travel back to last week. We talked about Prom Night from 1980. What was your feedback on our Prom Night episode?
I understand that Prom Night was a movie that a lot of you hold near and dear to your hearts, and thank you to everybody for listening in and joining us on our journey going through a movie that I thoroughly enjoyed watching, and I know you really enjoyed it too. And I, you know, nothing but good feedback and love, and a lot of people that I talked to were sort of like, you know, comparing it to the remake and wanting us to have talked about the remake a little bit, and it was in our plans and we just simply didn't get to it, so I apologize.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, just time constraints and, you know, didn't have a chance to go through and watch it. But that's all right. Eventually, we're going to get to some remakes on here. We may have an episode just dedicated to terrible reboots. And I got to imagine Prom Night's probably pretty high on that list, right next to the old Karate Kid starring Jaden Smith. Son of a bitch bastard. One thing I do want to add is I saw a lot of feedback from listeners just kind of adding in their own little prom stories about, you know, some of them didn't have dates or, you know, went great or went terrible. And I really enjoyed that. So thank you guys for tweeting at us at Back in Time Pod and giving us some feedback, because it feels good that you guys actually listen and respond, I would say. JD, anything you want to add in there? We do have quite a few new listeners. This podcast is a booming.
Thank you again. Like, seriously, this all started when Kyle randomly called me one night and was like, hey, you want to do a podcast? And I was like, dude, yes. I was like, you could have said anything and the answer would have been yes. Thankfully, it was podcast and not something weird, because I've gotten weird calls from him at 3 a.m. before. Oh, wait, no, that's me that called
him. I was going to say, that's you.
No, the big thing, guys and gals, is that we do this. Obviously, we enjoy doing it, but we do this for you. So interact with us, tweet at us, whether you love what we're saying or hate what we're saying. Let us know, because we want to get better and we want to improve and give you guys the best possible podcast experience that we can. There's a movie that you want us to cover. There's a topic you want us to touch on. Seriously, Unjust Justin, just lay into me.
Yeah, we've gotten some good recommendations lately. I know one of our listeners wants us to cover Cruel Intentions because it's 20 years old and actually wants to come on and guest. I think that's a good idea. I've had a couple things thrown our way from Dave's Pop Culture wants to come on and do. I think Little Giants was one of them. Austin Powers. So yeah, throw some ideas our ways, because sometimes it gets a little hard to, you know, think of that stuff on your own and like, geez, what should we do next? Should we do more horror? Should we do more comedy? Should we stick to 90s movies, which a lot of us grew up on? So yeah, keep tweeting that our way, and we'll keep churning them out here as we approach episode 100. JD, man, I feel like it was just a month back or two that we did our whole Back to the Future 3 episode parter, and we talked about, man, for episode 100, we got to do Back to the Future 2. Well, that's 8 weeks away.
When you first suggested that episode, and it had to be episode 50, had to be Back to the Future, and obviously episode 100 has to be Back to the Future 2. And I'm proud of us that we're going to hit this this landmark coming up soon, and it's going to be a hell of an episode. And if you haven't listened to our original Back to the Future review or the review that we did with author
Casey Gaines, I gotcha.
Check it out, because that was a fantastic set of episodes.
So yeah, if you want to listen to that Casey Gaines interview, if it's not up on Apple Podcasts, you can get it on our website, backintimepod.wordpress.com. All of our archives are on there. Or you can go over to YouTube, and we have the full interview up on there. And literally every episode that we've ever done is on our YouTube page. So, I mean, there's like 180 different audio videos that are up there. So take a peek and check that out. And yeah, I mean, maybe we'll re-release that coming up soon, so everybody can take a listen to that. Because, I mean, we pretty much have doubled in size since the original Back to the Future episode. Exciting stuff. Now, let's dive into the reason we're here. We're here to discuss Bloodsport. It's a 1988 American martial arts film directed by Newt Arnold. I like that name, Newt. It stars Jean-Claude Van Damme, Donald Gibb, Leah Ayers, and Bolo Young. The film is partially based on unverified claims made by martial artist Frank Dukes. We're going to talk more about that in a minute. It sold pretty well at the box office, grossed about $65 million on a $1.5 to $2.3 million budget, which is an estimation. Bloodsport was one of Van Damme's first starring roles and showcased his athletic ability, and it has become quite a bit of a cult film. If you want to hear us break down box office and critic response to this, go back to our teaser trailer, and you can hear us break that down in detail. This was also Cannon Group, which is the distributor for this film's most profitable film of 1988. I don't know what happened to Cannon. I gotta imagine they got bought out by some bigger distribution filmmaking company. And then a couple VHS and DVD things I found here. Bloodsport was released on VHS, selling 150,000 units by 1989. And then Warner Brothers released a DVD of the film in October of 2002. And if you haven't watched the movie in a while and you have Amazon Prime, it is streaming on Prime right now for free. Now, JD, I know you dug into the Frank Dukes story. Give me some details, man. I never got around to reading the article. What did we find out about that?
It's a crazy, crazy story. Apparently, Frank Dukes is a real person, not Ducks, not D or douche or anything like
it's
that.
It's Dukes.
Like, put up your Dukes. I don't know. I mean, there's so much about this guy's life that is just unverified to the point that it almost seems like it could actually all be true. But he claims that he fought in the Vietnam War. Sometimes he says he never fought in the Vietnam War. He was in the military. That was verified, but never sent overseas or deployed or anything like that. But claims that he was so secretive and so in deep that it just was never claimed. Reminds me of the movie Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, where Chuck Barris, the host of the Gong Show or the Dating Game, or what, Sam Rockwell did an amazing job. George Clooney's first directing rollout, where, you know, it's the same kind of a thing, where writes a book that verifies and says that he's a CIA agent, and then CIA and everybody says, no, you're not. Basically, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind is kind of like this guy's real life claim to fame, and he claimed to fight in the real Kumite in the Bahamas, claims to have won it, and then all the stats at the end are just claims by him to have knocked somebody out in, what, 0.12 seconds and all of that, and none of it is verified.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, even if half of it's true, it's a pretty wild story.
Well, and there's YouTube videos of him supposedly breaking bulletproof glass.
Hmm.
But it's all stuff where it's like a he said, she said kind of a thing. And I try to live my life by believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. And so he's kind of like, here's the receipt to the bulletproof glass that I bought. And I broke it with a punch. And then, but people are like, no, it wasn't. And it's just a fiasco. And I don't know that we'll ever find out the truth, which is frustrating because I want to know, is there an actual Kumite?
The first rule about Kumite is nobody talks about Kumite. Well, let's take a quick break. We're going to be back on the other side, and we're going to have Big Ben from the Angry Dad podcast joining us. Can't wait. Talk to you guys in a minute.
Never die. You hate shit, I hate shit. Angry Dad podcast. Dumbasses make you mad, I get mad. Angry Dad podcast. Need help getting your lazy ass up to do shit? Angry Dad podcast. Want to hear my crazy stories on Friday? Angry Dad podcast. You can find me on Spreaker, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Want to watch Angry Dad podcast? IGTV, YouTube. You can find me at Beat of the Fourth Power on every social media. Check me out.
All right, we are back, and joining us right now on the line, we've got Big Ben from the Angry Dad podcast joining us. Ben, what's happening, man?
Woo! Doing good, guys. Ready to jump into this podcast with you guys.
Getting funky like a monkey.
Oh, yeah.
Little Dusty Rolls for you, if you will. Love the American dream, baby. If you love wrestling talk, get into our archives. We've got plenty of material in there with Big Ben, a top five favorite wrestler episode. We've got a whole breakdown of Ready to Rumble with Pat from the Paranormal Pativity podcast. So check that out. But Ben, let our audience know where they can find your podcast, man.
Well, I'm the Angry Motherfucking Dad podcast. You can find me on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, fucking Podbean, fucking Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever that fucking shit is. You can also find me on IGTV, YouTube, all that good shit. I do a podcast 3 days a week. And you know what? It whatever comes to my mind. If I'm feeling motivated, if I'm pissed off about fucking something, you know, all I'm doing is putting out my thoughts and what I feel I need to say that most people won't even fucking say, you know? But I'm also on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, Tumblr, Facebook, everything. Be to the Fourth Power.
Yeah, check it out. Got some t-shirts for sale right now, too.
Oh, yeah, I just got them in. I got the buttons. I got a handful of buttons and magnets left for those that are, like I said, all you do is just post a podcast, tag me in it, let me see it. I'll get a hold of your information, and I'll send you one. Those are free. You know, say, but the shirts are going to cost you a 20.
$20 is well worth it, though, because he'll even pre-cut the sleeves for you, man.
Oh, yeah, now right off top. You know I'm going to give you that Angry Dad custom cut.
There you go. Man, I love it. You know, on top of that, you know, we're diving into one of my favorite movies growing up. Jeez, I feel like I watched this 100 times, Bloodsport. Ben, do you have any first memories of watching Bloodsport?
All right, now check this out. I do have first memories. And I'm going to say this is probably got because I think the movie came out in 88.
Yep.
And so it's got to be about 90. One of my friends down the street from my house saw, Ben, I got this badass movie. It's a and he, this is what he's telling me, is I got this badass movie. It's like an illegal underground tape, and we're not supposed to watch it. And I'm like, all right, well, fuck, let's watch it. You know what I'm saying? Bust out the fucking old school blank VHS. We're watching this VHS, and it fucking right off top is Bloodsport. And I'm fucking hypnotized. I'm like, this is the most legitest fucking movie ever. And then right at, you know, like I said, there's just so many fucking things that are badass about it. I just always remember that. And one of the other memories that I have of this movie, and you know, my daughter is about 12, but when she was 10, she could recite these words, the damn movie from word for word. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how often we would watch.
Yeah.
Dude, that's fantastic.
I love it. Oh, yeah. Do you guys still watch? Does she still watch it?
Watch anyways. Oh yeah, we were watching it this morning.
I love that. All right, well that's cool. That's a good first story. I think I had this on a copied VHS tape as well with like two other movies. It's one of those you got three movies on one tape. I think my dad recorded them on like HBO or something.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Well, let's dive into the movie here. So we're going to begin with a montage of all the different fighters. We're going to see Chung Lee right off the bat here breaking a block of ice. And it ends with Jackson working on the heavy bag. His coach says, "Are you really going to Hong Kong?" He's like, I heard people get killed at the Kumite. JD, what would you think of this opening montage? There's not a lot happening, but we get to see a lot of the fighters here.
For me, it's fantastic to see Jackson in a sort of controlled fighting setting, because I really just always picture him and remember him as being probably more of a bar fighter than an actually trained combatant.
Sure.
And this little scene for me, as I rewatched, I was like, oh, that's right. This guy's actually the shit. He's not just a 6'4" ogre.
Okay. I like it. We cut to Frank Dukes, who's approached by a sergeant, told he needs to talk to the colonel, and he says he will go, but you're going to have to wait till I get a shower. And then he pulls the old turn on the shower head and slip out the back door here. Ben, let's talk about our main lead here. Frank Dukes, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme. Man, how big of a star was he in the 80s and 90s?
Oh, God. This guy was number... Like I said, there's a handful of people that were number one, but he was right up there. I'm talking about... There's probably about a top three, top four of the action guys from these days, and he was definitely up there. And... man, let me tell you something right now. Jean-Claude Van Damme had it all. The muscles, the split kick, everything. You know what I'm saying? This guy could do it all. And you know what? Even on that scene, as you're watching it, when that lieutenant comes up to go talk to him, and as he's kicking that fucking speed bag, the exact same story I was just telling you at my friend's house, he had one, and our dumbasses were out there trying to do that shit.
Could never do it quite as good as Frank Dukes, I'm imagining.
Ever.
That's hilarious. But yeah, for my money, it's Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Van Damme. Like, those are the top three guys in that period. There's a couple other great ones in there too, but I mean, those guys were like at the top of their game.
Well, see, like, if I have to do mine, it's slightly different. It's going to be right off top, Steven Seagal.
Okay.
Van Damme. And then I would have to shoot go for Chuck Norris.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, you're going straight martial arts guys. I was thinking more action
exactly.
Guys.
Right off top. Yeah, exactly. That kind of action.
I definitely like some Steven Seagal. Under Siege?
Under Siege.
Yeah,
yes.
I love that. Love that movie growing up. So my dad used to make me watch that shit all the time.
I still make my kids watch that shit all the time.
We cut the Dukes entering the home of an elderly Asian woman, and he asked how he's doing, and she says, "Oh, well, he's happy to see you." And he stares at a samurai sword and has a flashback scene here where he was a younger kid and a few of his friends tried to break into this very same house and steal that katana. And one thing I want to point out here, and this must have been a bit of a wardrobe screw up, but he's wearing a San Francisco Giants hat, but a New York Football Giants shirt. JD, obviously the wardrobe people, probably not sports fans, huh?
Either that or he just likes Giants. Yeah. Maybe his favorite movie is The Iron Giants.
Maybe it's Little Giants. Who knows?
I mean, it's odd to see that sort of... But kids are stupid.
Very true.
We cut to a young boy coming out and kicking young Frank in the gut, knocking him down. And that's when we meet Tanaka next. Let's listen to our first clip.
Cannot get katana sword by stealing. It is a very special sword. You must earn it.
I wasn't going to steal it.
You didn't flinch. You have fighting spirit.
You're not gonna call the cops?
Not if we make a deal.
What kind of a deal?
Your son and my son are in the same school. Frank sees my son's skill, and he desires to learn martial science too.
Yes, but what do you mean by martial science?
Frank's tell me you came to America to grow vine.
Yes, that's right. I work at the Verne Vineyard.
I came here to grow fish in my hatchery. We both grow children. You use science to make vines grow better. Like vines, children need training. Martial science provides a way of training. Brings mind, body, spirit together.
What'd you think of this first scene here with Tanaka and Frank?
This scene is so iconic to me because, you know, it just shows that how naive this kid is. Yet, you know, this Tanaka sitting there trying to be like, you got fighting spirit. And with this fucking Japanese stereotypic voice, I just don't feel he's hitting it right for that time being. But now that I watched it this morning, I'm like, man, he really tried to sell that shit.
Yeah, it's a very LaRusso, Mr. Miyagi type of moment there.
Exactly.
I like it. But now we're going to cut to some training montage shots next of young Frank with Shingo and Tanaka. Shingo gets attacked at school. Frank comes to the rescue, beats up these bullies, and then he kind of dusts Shingo off a little bit, and he's like, one day, I'm going to fight in Kumite. Make father proud. JD, it's a horrible impression. What do you think of the storyline setup, though?
This is one hell of a montage, and if I'm not mistaken, it's probably one of the more spacious montages in probably cinema history. Because, like, it keeps going and going, and all of a sudden now that we've got the school training, and the bill of his cap is cut off. But it's just, I don't know, it's funny. Like, rewatching it now and seeing the voiceovers and this, what is this kid? Just some little Italian kid here? Like, it just reminded me of the kid from A Bronx Tale.
Okay. That's a good reference.
One of my favorite movies of all time. I doubt it'll be a future episode because have either of you even seen A Bronx Tale?
Gangster movies?
Okay, thank you. I was a little worried there for a second because none of you bit on it. Well, because I said A Bronx Tale, and usually when you're in a room of people that have seen it, like, you get an implosion of excitement if anyone has seen it, and you guys are just kind of like,
yeah,
like
that's
Bradley
cool.
Cooper and American Hot Selection.
Man, you sell it, bro. Let me tell you right now, bro. I grew up on gangster movies, man. My whole life in the beginning was being a gangster. That's all I ever did. So I had to watch every one of them fucking movies so I know what the hell to do with my own life.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I'll kind of add in there, because you mentioned how long just these montages are. I bet if we add it up, this movie's got 40 minutes of montage.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's a lot of montage.
This is the most montage movie ever.
I think so. So we find out next Shingo has passed away, and Frank and Tanaka argue next about Frank wanting to learn how to fight, and Tanaka is just not sure if he's going to be able to handle it. But eventually he's able to kind of talk him into it, and our training begins here. And man, the training is horrible, first off, because Tanaka does not take it easy on him whatsoever. And, you know, I mean, he's blindfolded and just beating the living crap out of him. Ben, what do you think of all the training footage here between the two?
All right, let me tell you something about this training footage. This is the shit that I'm thinking of when I'm at the gym. This is the kind of shit that I watch before I go to the gym. This is the kind of stuff that I watch while I'm doing cardio on the gym as I mentally kill everybody around me. You know what I'm saying? This is where the inspiration for being huge as fuck comes from for me, bro. And so as I'm watching this training montage, and every time I watch, I get the goosebumps, and I'm like, God, I want to be a badass.
And you already are.
And that's why I will continue to be one, because I constantly watch this movie at least once or twice a week.
Fantastic.
Tanaka tells him to practice meditating to the point where you can see and feel nothing. And he's saying this as he's beating the shit out of him with a bamboo stick, which I thought was hilarious. And then
I love the thud.
Yeah, exactly. And then we cut to Frank being tied to the trees here and stretched out. It's got a little William Wallace from God, what's that movie where he gets stretched? Braveheart. There we go.
Yeah.
I was thinking Waterworld for some reason. Why I was like that. It popped in my head. I was like, it's not Waterworld. What the fuck? So he stares at Tanaka as he's like stretched out and just starts pulling himself up to the point where he actually breaks one of the tree branches. And Tanaka's just like, that a boy, even though he doesn't say anything. He's just like, And then in the next scene, he's awarded the katana sword from Tanaka. So, JD, we got a lot of setups early on. We got a lot of beating early on as well. What would you think of this part, though?
This is still part of the montage. Let's acknowledge that fact. Like, our last 3 to 4 breakdowns have all been montage. And at the end of it, I wonder what Tarantino took from this scene into Kill Bill. I'm sure there was a lot of nods, at least in terms of how he steals from other people. borrow.
Right.
It's a fun little scene, and he presents the sword, and I honestly, like, to me, I feel like there's a whole another movie in this where we get to see and just spend the time on him as a kid going to school and beating up, I mean, just karate kid, but cooler with blood and, like, splits.
Good point.
I want to see that. Bloodsport Jr. I want to see that.
coming to Netflix in a matter of months, I'm sure. So we cut back to present day. Finally, we're out of the montages for a minute. Frank enters to talk to his Shidoshi. Let's listen to our clip here where he tells him he's going to Kumite.
I'm going to Hong Kong.
You're sure you want to do this?
To honor you means everything to me.
I have poured all my knowledge into you. When you fight, my spirit will fight with you. In Kumite, you will need it.
Ben, what do you think about this scene, man?
Man, you know what? It's funny as hell, because as soon as he walks through the room, he already knows he's awake, but he asks him, "You awake?" And he goes right off that. He's like, "Do you sleep with your eyes open, fucking jackass?"
Can I point out here, he doesn't look sick at all?
At all. He's just laying in bed.
He doesn't even sound sick. He's like, "Oh, hello, Frank." I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Oh, it was great, though.
Jackson and Frank are on a bus next. They're in Hong Kong. They don't talk, but this is the first time that we get to see them on screen together. Let's talk about Jackson real quick. JD, Jackson's played by Jackson Dibb, the actor. He's best known for two roles, really. It's here is Jackson in the role of Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds. He's been out of the business since 2011. But what do you think of him here as Jackson?
He's fantastic. He's kind of, obviously, if you did a proper update to Bloodsport, you can pull in any number of great burly actors to play Jackson in modern times. But sure. In 1988, he's got the face, he's got the bandana, he's got the hair. He's big, but he's also that kind of body where you're like, dude, do you work out? But then you would see him work out, and you'd be like, shit, dude works out.
Country strong.
Yes, he is Texas thick.
Quick correction before I get the tweets on Twitter. He mean you missed up his name. It's Donald Gibb, not Jackson Gibb. I just had a little typo on my notes. Relax, people. It happens. All right? We cut to a bar scene where a blonde woman, who we will come to find out is Janice, a reporter, is questioning a couple of Japanese men, asking if they're here for Kumite. And they're like, Kumite? No, never heard of it. And then we have Jackson and Frank finally meet next. They're playing an arcade game. Frank's beating him up here pretty good in the game. Jackson's like, you like this type of fighting? You should see me at Kumite. And Frank's like, oh, I'm also here for Kumite. And he's like, aren't you a little young for that? And then Frank's like, well, aren't you a little old for video games? And they just laugh and start playing again. Ben, are you any good at these type of classic, like, arcade fighting games?
Growing up, my mom worked at the drive-in movie theater next to my house. So every single weekend, my mom
Time out. Hold up. There was a drive-in next to your house?
Oh, yeah. Well, in the city that I lived in, there was a drive-in movie theaters, and my mom worked there at night. And so what ended up happening is every weekend or during the summer, we'd go with her to work instead of her getting a babysitter, watch the double feature, and then before the show and in between the shows, we would go in and out, and we could play all the video games we want, eat all the popcorn we want, and have all the soda we want. So, you know, shit, all those original arcade games, just like he was playing right there, I got to play, I mastered them, I beat the fuck out of them, you know? And you remember the original Street Fighter one when it was like the little pixelated guys? I used to play that all the time, and then I get to, like, the brick chopping, boom, and I finally was able to get all the fucking bricks.
So I've got a similar story to playing video games with my mom, but it's when she took us to the horse track and she was betting on the ponies and she gave us $1 to go play arcade games. Oh, wait, your story's better.
Good time still, bro. You're still playing games. That's all.
That is when I beat the Simpsons arcade game, was when my mom was betting on the ponies.
So what classic, you're saying is your mom is Uncle Buck.
Yeah, they kind of look the same.
Okay. So we meet Helmer and Rollins next. I have to think we're going to talk a lot more about Forrest Whitaker in future episodes. JD, are you a Forrest Whitaker fan?
Are you trying to tee me up to make fun of his eyes?
No. Who said anything about his eyes? Crooked as fuck.
Going in this
totally crooked as fuck. What'd you say?
No, he's a fan. He's cool. He's a great actor. He's a lot of fun. I don't know the story and tweet your hate at me audience because I'm insensitive to the fact that he probably has some abnormality that I just don't know about.
I don't know.
But he's fantastic.
I mean, he always has his eye on the pulse, though.
Oh, gosh.
Well, you got to have that eye on the prize to get that far.
Yeah. It's a cross between being... I got to stop, okay?
I'm going to cross my T's and dot my lowercase J's.
Oh, Wayne's World 2, future episode. There you go. All right, so let's get to our next clip here. And we meet Lynn, who I love. Lynn's an awesome character here. But let's listen to Lynn explaining the Kumite to the guys.
Like, put up your dukes, right? Okay, so here's the deal. This is the biggest Kumite ever. We got fighters from all over. I've been assigned by the IFAA to help you and the other North American fighters find your way around. I'm gonna make sure you guys give it your best and don't disqualify by fighting outside the arena. Try it. Yeah, I like the mafia.
Ben, what do you think of Lynn? I like this little dude, and I like the explanation of Kumite. What do you think?
Lynn is the perfect description of an Americanized, pretending to be Chinese guy, Japanese guy, explaining right. Everything. He's got the looks. He's got the moves. He's shaking the hands, and he's moving that feathered fucking mullet everywhere.
I love it. You know, this guy was like probably born in California, had never even been to Hong Kong before. just perfect casting.
It was great.
So Lynn takes them through the city down some very questionable looking alleys here. One Japanese guy gives them the thumbs up and says, okay, USA, which Jackson mocks. And then finally they arrive at the club, arena, whatever we want to call it, for Kumite. And inside, we see all the fighters who are warming up, getting ready, doing a little sparring. Lynn tells them they need to show their invitation, and then they need to qualify and prove that they won't get killed. They question Dukes right away because it says he represents Shidoshi Tanaka, and they say, you don't look like a Tanaka. And then they make him prove it by smashing bricks with his hand. And Lynn's like, after he does it, which is badass, by the way, because he smashes the bottom brick from like a stack of four. Lynn's like, is that good enough, guys? They're like, yeah, we'll honor the invitation. Jackson's like, no shit, you're going to honor it. JD, what do you think of this scene?
Ben, go ahead. Go for it.
All right, watch this movie. I did a lot of things from this movie, okay? And breaking bricks is something I tried.
I think most stupid kids have tried that, yes.
Exactly. But I've only broken one brick ever, and it wasn't like a that kind of brick, but it was like a like one of those flat center block bricks you would lay on the ground.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
I broke it, but I didn't break my hand, but god damn it fucking hurt. my mom was watching me the whole time from the window. She's like, I saw you do it, dumbass.
She's like, you know Bloodsport's a movie, asshole.
We used to always, my grandfather was a carpenter, so we used to always try with 2x4s, which are stronger than they look.
A lot stronger than they look. So we cut back to Helmer and Rollins, who have arrived in Hong Kong, and they tell an inspector that they're here to stop Frank Dukes from fighting in the Kumite. We cut back to the bar where Janice is about to get slapped by another fighter. When Frank stops him and then ends up making a bet, he tells the guy, if I can grab this quarter from your hand before you close it, then I get the girl. If you close it and I can't get it, you get the girl. And then she's like, what are you doing? And Jackson's like, seriously, dude, do you know what you're doing here? So the guy closes his hand and laughs. He's like, "You lose, asshole." And then Frank points to his hand and opens it up. And not only did he switch, he got the quarter, but he switched it with a different looking coin. And then we just cut to Janice and Frank talking outside. And she's explaining, you know, "I've heard that Kumite is like cockfighting." And he's like, no, there's more to it than that. And then he agrees with her that if she goes to dinner with him, that he will tell her more about the Kumite. Ben, I don't know that this plot makes a lot of sense, but I guess you kind of have to have a love angle here. What do you think?
No. There's no love angle. But what it is they have to sneak in the ass shot, regardless, for Jean-Claude Van Damme, because it's in every fucking movie. It's just the lead up to it. That's all it is. They find a hot woman that's willing to take the D after he gets the D to get the random ass shot.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We don't get any of her, just him. Yeah. Yes. So Jackson and Duke show up for the opening ceremonies, which consist of a bunch of guys jumping around with flying flags, and they're on fire, and I don't know why they do that. So let's listen to a clip explaining the origin of the tournament.
"Welcome, warriors of the world. Today, you become part of a tradition that began hundreds of years ago. The Kumite was first used by the Korokai, the Black Dragon Society, to measure the fighting skills and spirit of its members. Every 5 years, the best fighters in its ranks would face each other in full contact, with one winner emerging as the superior warrior, the champion. The Kokurukai has been joined by the International Fighting Arts Association as co-sponsor for this event, and as the guardians of a rich and powerful heritage. After 3 days, one fighter will prove himself to be the best. May the mightiest warrior prevail."
JD, what do you think about the explanation here?
It's really cool that we get this sort of like backstory, and it's just obviously the video game Mortal Kombat took a lot out of Enter the Dragon and Bloodsport. Literally, they took Frank Dukes to become Johnny Cage. But like, it's a cool concept that I kind of wish that they spend a little bit more time evolving. Like, I don't necessarily care as much about Dukes' backstory as I care about the backstory and champions of Kumite. I don't know. That's just me personally. Like, I want to know what Chong Li's last victory looked like. Who was his opponent? Okay. I'm just so giddy right now. Like, I love history when it comes to movies, and I feel like it's cool that we get it, but I want more.
Here's what I'd like to know. Like, at what point do they sit down and they go, "Before we start tournament, we must have flag boys come out. We light them on fire. They twirl around. Then we give origin. Then we start match." Like, whose fucking idea is this? Why do we need these guys?
Well, you got to have the warm-up. You got to get the crowd going.
Get some cheerleaders. God damn, they got 5 billion people there.
We want the history. Screw you both. I want to know who was the champ last year, the champ before.
Well, hey, then I'm going to dive a little deeper into something that I always felt was an undertone to this movie, because I always felt it was a revenge movie. Because what it was is, you got to assume the Tanaka's son went to the Kumite and Chung Li killed him, because they talk about it all the time. He killed the last person right in the throat. And he died, and he watched them. Yet, they never dive into that saying or thinking that Frank Dukes is this guy's, brother, as in, like, you know, we train in training, and we've known each other for all this time. And that's what I felt the last, that's how he won. Chung Li killed the last guy, which was the brother. And like I said, just those pure spectacle. This is just what I gather from watching the movie so many fucking times. And I just feel that's how the brother died, the son died, and that's why he's joining into the Kumite to get revenge, but yet they never say it. But, you know, like, that's just me putting the pieces that I see together.
God, that seems like the obvious plot to the movie. Why did they not do that?
Exactly.
I want to watch that movie. Ben, can you make that movie so I can watch it?
I'm going to work on it.
There we go. Well, the tournament begins. We've got this amazing score that plays in the background. I'm going to insert it right here. And the first fight ends with a knockout jumping uppercut. At one point, Jackson taps Dukes and says, that's why they call it blood sport, because the guy's bleeding. Get it?
Oh, yeah. That's the title of the movie.
I know.
Holy moly.
Match two.
Insert here.
Match two is Jackson versus like really small, young looking kid. And it begins with him taking some shots, and then he eventually gets popped in the mouth and his lip or nose starts to bleed a little bit. And Jackson just walks over, grabs the dude by the back of the head, and just like Wally hops him in the top of the head and just kills him. I mean, the little dude looked dead in the ring. And then Jackson celebrates and starts calling out Chung Li, who just like smirks at him and acknowledges him with a little head nod. Chung Li gets up for his next fight, and the crowd starts chanting his name. And Lin's like, the last kumite, he killed a man. And Jackson's like, yeah, he just stood there and watched him die right at his feet. So Chung Li makes very quick work of his first opponent, and this dude is just jacked too. Then we cut to Dukes. He's up next, looking very stoic. He's matched up against the guy that was going to slap Janice at the bar, and he makes really quick work of this guy. Actually breaks fastest win record, 12.2 seconds, world record. Jackson stands up and yells, first fight in the kumite, and he broke the fucking world record. Ben, what did you think of the fight so far?
All right, I'm going to step a little bit back. After Jackson won his fight and he goes up there, Frank tells him right off top, what took so long?
Yeah.
You know? And he looks at him like, oh, this fucking guy. So right off top, these guys got a brother relationship going, and it's fucking hilarious because they keep going back and forth about it. But let me tell you now, this first match was perfect because after he got the first fastest knockout, the guy gets up and tries to get him from the back. But right when he gets him from the back, boom, hits him with a vicious elbow, spinning back elbow to the fucking jaw, and then he falls right on the floor. And then the guy that was cleaning up the blood sees the gold tooth that this motherfucker had in his mouth, goes there to clean the blood, grabs the tooth, and bites it. I was like, are you fucking serious right now? That's disgusting, bro.
Pretty gangster, though.
Dude, no, it's not gangster. It's the scene from Home Alone when Mr. McAllister finds the gold tooth on the floor and he, oh, what's this? Oh, I'm going to go ahead and keep this.
So we continue to have just a massive amount of montage shots here. JD, do you have a favorite fighter minus Jackson, Dukes, or Chung Li?
Dude, it's the monkey guy.
Monkey? Okay.
I love the monkey guy, and I love the training shot that we got to see from him earlier where he climbs up the tree and he's just karate chopping coconuts.
Is that a real fighting style, or is this possibly the most racist movie of all time?
A combination of both, but it is a real fighting style.
I mean, if you watch his skills in the ring, Ben, I don't know about you necessarily, but Kyle and I, we would get our asses kicked by this guy as he's running around and we're trying to like grapple him and he's just like, nope, roll, chop you in the knee. I feel like Ben might be able to take that and like throw it on a rock bottom and survive it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, I would tell, I'm Jackson. I just charge forward. I would probably miss with my hands. He'd go underneath my legs and then kick my head off. No doubt.
Oh yeah, and I got a lot of fighting experience behind me, so you know I can hold my own.
Me and JD just kick in the nuts and run. That's our fighting
which
style.
Is always a good move.
It's a solid move.
Well, it's also fantastic full contact, move. So it's a legal move.
Yeah, exactly. So Jackson's second fight ends up with he just throws the guy headfirst out of the stage and like dusts off his hands and then just starts yelling, go home. Dukes wheelhouse kicks his guy in the head into the next round, and then Chung Li looks to be barely even breaking a sweat up to this point. So we cut to Helmer and Rollins eating dinner. The inspector comes by. Now, one thing I like about this scene, I don't have a lot of notes on it, but he was like, the inspector makes a comment about how he never eats there. He's like, oh, I'll never eat here. And then they throw the meat to the dog, and the dog won't eat the meat. And it's like a
I love it.
But fucking Rollins and Helmer were just, they were diving into that food. So anyway, the inspector tells him that, hey, Dukes is staying at a hotel nearby, so they get up and take off, and they find him in the hotel with Jackson just sitting in the lobby having a couple cold ones. And Jackson's like, who are these doofuses? And Rollins like, hey, it's none of your business. And he calls him pal. And Jackson's like, hey, I ain't your pal, dick face. And then Homer says, the government has invested a lot of money in Dukes, and we're here to make sure he doesn't get hurt. And he tells him, Dukes like, I need 2 days, all right? And then they threaten to stun gun him, which Jackson jumps up, tackles them, and Dukes gets away. And then we have quite possibly maybe the worst montage in movie cinema history of Dukes. It looks like he's literally just playing tag. Like, you guys can't fucking get me. Come on. Like, he's hiding behind walls and then, like, throwing a trash can and then just, like, smiling the whole time. And it ends with the two guys just ending up in the ocean and he just waves at him as he jumps on the back of a bike. I mean,
so let me just intercede really quick. And have you guys ever seen, there's a version of this on YouTube where they play the Mentos music and then they CGI. And so they make it into a Mentos commercial.
That's perfect.
Mentos fresher, Mentos, da-da, Mentos, da-da-da-da-da, fresh of life. And it's just him running around and it's perfect because he's throwing garbage cans and he's jumping over stuff. And then he's just waving, and then they give him the little thing of Mentos, and it's just, if you haven't seen it, Kyle, tweet it. I'll put it on Instagram.
Okay,
it's effing hilarious. It's
oh yeah, definitely have to look that up.
Ben, what do you think of the corny montage?
Right off top, this is Montage City. You know what I'm saying? Because it's montage after montage after montage. I think it's like montage 5 minutes, montage 5 minutes, montage 5 minutes. Because I don't know what the hell's going on, but let me tell you right now. It's just hilarious that, you know, he's just like no effort. He's like jumping behind trees and he's like, look, bro, come get me. You guys ain't going to get me. Fucking Forrest Whitaker's too fat. Fucking the old guy's too old. They can't keep up. I'm like, and right off top, you already said you invested too much money into him. What makes you think you can even catch him? Fuck.
Janice and Frank are having dinner next. She wants him to get her in the Kumite. And he's like, I don't know. You know, they got really strict rules. And she's like, okay, well, you know, if that doesn't work, you know, I at least want to just like get to know you a little bit. We cut to the next morning and Frank has laid the pipe and we have a bare ass shot of Jean-Claude Van Damme. I have to imagine, JD, you enjoyed this scene quite a bit. Did you not?
Oh, fantastic. With them just pulling up those bikini briefs and just showing off those delts.
Well, they do call them the muscles from Brussels.
Yes, they go. Do.
Dukes leaves for the next round of action, and he tells her before he leaves, he's like, I'm sorry, I cannot get you into Kumite. As he arrives, Lin is lecturing him in the next scene for not showing up, and he's late and not telling him where he's at, and he's like, this is my reputation. Make me look bad. Jackson tries to break a brick here, trying to pull a Dukes, but he doesn't get it quite, so he just picks one up and breaks it over his forehead, and he's like, here you guys go. And then we also see Janice has gone undercover as a date with this wealthy dude. And she turns and looks at Frank. She's like, yeah, it's not my first time doing something like this for a story. The fights begin. Day two. Dukes makes quick work of another opponent. Chong Li gets into a little bit of a tougher fight. He actually gets cracked here once, draws a little blood. But then he comes back pretty quick, destroys this guy, and literally snaps his femur with a leg kick. Brutal. Look like Paul George's leg when he fell in the NBA. Anybody, you guys remember that scene at all?
Yep.
Ugh. Awful. Ugh. The crowd chants again for Chong Li. And then Dukes' next fight goes a lot like his first one's. Quick work. Then we see another quick, vicious win by Chong Li. And then Dukes' next fight is against that massive Nigerian man who does the throat slash to him.
Oh, yeah.
Right off the bat, Dukes kicks him twice and then finishes him again within seconds. I feel like he broke the world record, but they didn't acknowledge it on this one.
And I was like, hit him with that rolling jump kick.
Yep. It was badass.
Sweet.
Chong Li destroys another dude in the next fight, and then Dukes gets matched up with this Andre the Giant looking Japanese dude. And he's actually the first guy to actually do something to Dukes. He gets him in the bear hug. Which Dukes is like looking around like, what the hell do I do here? So he headbutts him 3 times and then punches him in the gut just like he did with the bricks, which like shakes his entire body. And then he does the splits and nutshots him for the win. And the crowd's actually chanting Dukes' name now. JD, what were your thoughts on the matches for day two so far?
I loved seeing the diversity between the competitors and the ups and the downs and the nut shots. And we have E. Honda clearly here against Dukes going for the bear hug instead of the thousand hand slap. But, it's a Street Fighter is a different game than Bloodsport, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we get to the main event for day two. It's Jackson versus Chong Li. Jackson turns to Lin and Dukes and says, "Well, time to separate the men from the boys." And Dukes is like, "Hey, man, go for the gut." And you can get him to the stomach, stay away from his right leg. And Jackson's like, "Will you stop worrying? I got this under control, man." So the fight begins, and Jackson is just tomahawking him into the mat right off the bat. But instead of getting on top of him and finishing him off, turns around and starts celebrating. Chong Li recovers and goes right to that right leg kick. Dukes tries to run to the mat to stop it, but Lin holds him back as he's like screaming, "Stop!" And Chong Li stomps his head here, and it looks like Jackson might be dead on the mat. Chong Li and Dukes have a little bit of a face-off. Ben, man, what a huge mistake by Jackson. Not sure what he was thinking.
Well, right off top, he thought he knocked him out cold. He was screaming, "Texas! Texas!" And he was just like so juiced that he did it, man. But if he would have just kept on him, he could have literally just got him out. But he could have. But you know what? What ends up happening is you get so juiced that you knocked up, you felt you fucked up the champ, and you got a little bit of taste of victory, and then boom, snatched away. You know what I'm saying? And one of my favorite things is right before the fight, he's like, "You sound like my mom." You know what I'm saying? "I got this shit. Fuck." You know what I'm saying? But fuck, he was so close.
That's what makes me so mad. In this movie, it's like a massive red flag for me in comparing the fighters. Jackson beats Chong Li. Jackson wins this match. He needs to win this match. He overpowers and is victorious and then blows it.
Yep.
So the finale, no spoiler alert, is clearly Dukes versus Jackson.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
But he's clearly such a mother. Ben, I'm going to pull a page from your playbook here. He's a motherfucking massive fighter.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't come, it's so frustrating. It's like, you beat last year or 5 years ago, Kumite champion Chong Li, and you just let him come back. So frustrating.
Yep. So we're at the hospital. We find out he's going to be okay. Doctor says, you'll be out of here in a week. And then Janice and Frank get into an argument. Not a lot going on in these scenes. Janice eventually even goes to the investigator trying to stop the Kumite. And he's like, "Why do you want to stop?" She's like, "I got a friend in there." And he's like, "Well, what's friend's name?" "Frank Dukes." And the light bulb goes off for the investigator. And then we have another montage scene here of Frank riding on a bus or train. Not sure which it was. And this song is playing in the background. I got to say, man, 80s sports theme movies were the shit. The lyrics are just saying exactly what's going on in the movie at the time. This one's like, "It hurts to find you failed the test, knowing you gave your best. I'll never let you down."
It's like basketball.
Oh, it's hilarious how obvious it is. Ben, what do you think of the great song here in this montage?
Oh, this whole movie had a great soundtrack, period. Mm-hmm. Made you feel good, made you feel up. It had you all over the place. And when they're playing this music, man, it made you feel bad for him. He's like, fuck, he's got to really win. He's got to do this for the home team. You know what I'm saying? Put you right in the mood for when the Kumite hits.
I want to hear the whole song because at some point he's like, "And if you lose the fight, Jackson will never forgive you in the hospital bed. You fucking suck. You're all alone." So Duke arrives at the Kumite next. Helmer and Rollins are there to try and stop him. And then the investigator pops out and his men try to get Dukes. And seriously, these guys are going to stop Duke. The Kumite guys couldn't. So he just makes quick work of them. And again, he's like, "I tell you, tomorrow at the airport, I'll be there." So Helmer and Rollinger is like, "I'm not stopping him." So they just go in to watch the fights. JD, why would these guys even try to stop him at this point? He's a little too far in, is he not?
I love that. And from a writing standpoint, you kind of always want to give your characters this excuse to just be like, oh, screw it. Like, let's just go with it.
Right.
And, you know, you're taught to not do that. You're supposed to give conflict into your characters at every turn point that you can. Every question and answer is supposed to bring forth 2 to 3 more questions out of it. But I love the way that they are literally just like, we're here. You know, like, they've got egg rolls. Let's just do this.
So Dukes is first up for the day. He stares really hard at Chung Li beforehand. And then the fight begins. He almost gets knocked out here on the first punch from this guy. He's really no joke. But Dukes responds quickly with a bunch of leg kicks. And he even gets into like a body shot for body shot exchange with this guy before literally like spin kicking his head off. So the crowd again is chanting for Dukes. And Chung Lee's like smirking, give him the little head nod. They must have filmed like 30 minutes of Chung Li just like smiling and head nodding, because there's a lot of those cuts. And then Janice is now front row cheering him on. Chung Li is next up. The fight ends badly for Chung Li. He literally, like, he does kill this dude on the mat. So he's celebrating to the crowd, but it goes south on him here because the judges actually stand up and just turn their back on him. And then he goes over the Dukes, and this is the most voiced over shot of all time. And he's like, "You are next." And then he throws his hands in frustration at the judges. Ben, I think you'll like this reference here, but is Chung Li not just like the Jose Canseco of Kumite?
He is the Jose Canseco.
Oh, that was perfect.
Shout out to Oakland. The Oakland A's. Bash Brothers. Loved it. So we get to the final match. Lin tells him he can make history today. And Dukes is ready for the final matchup. We see Chung Li is wearing the scarf. Not the scarf shit. Chung Li is wearing the bandana of Jackson around his knee. And the match starts with Chung Li telling Dukes that, "You break my record? Now I break you." And he's like, I break your friend. And he points to his bandana. And Dukes lands a couple shots early on, even a jumping kick right off the ref's back, which was kind of sweet. And he's really dialed in, landing a lot of shots early on. But Chung Li starts to come back, landing some blows to the head. And he presses forward with his chest out. He's a legit badass, but he is Jose Canseco. Yeah. Leg kicks his chest and then tosses him across the mat. So Dukes gets back to his feet and lands another leg kick to the head. Chung Li charges, but Dukes jumps over him, flipping in the air, and then kicks Chung Li like over his left shoulder. Just crazy flexibility to do something like that. And then he lands another leg shot that sends Chung Li to the mat. And as he's struggling to get up, and we saw this in The Three Ninjas, reaches into the old pocket, pulls out some powder of some sort, and just throws it right into his eyes. So now Dukes can't see. He's like all panicked. And Chung Li, he starts to light him up now. Headshot after headshot, dropping him to the mat. He finally gets up. He sweeps out the legs from him. Dukes is just like screaming in pain, trying to clear his vision. And he kind of looks left, look right. And then he closes his eyes and remembers his training. Gotta remember the training, bro. Eat those vitamins. Say your prayers, brother. And he blocks the next punch and then starts to counter Chung Li blind now. And this is some pretty awesome stuff. And he's making him look terrible and doing it completely blind. Massive spinning heel kick. He gets on top of Chung Li and he says, "Say it! Say it!" And then Chung Li finally says, "Mate." And he takes the bandana off of him, and that's the end of the fight. JD, what do you think of this final matchup here?
It's such a cool match, and it, to me, from a writing standpoint, I'm going to say, like, I really feel that him having the illegal object really cheapens Chung Li having this dust to throw in his face. And if you have read the actual real Frank Dukes, his story, he claims that it was just sweat that got into his eye, but he was blinded and did fight the remainder of his match blinded. It's cinematically great because it puts the stakes through the roof, but I think Chung Li's a better fighter than this.
Okay. Let's listen to Dukes getting awarded in the next scene.
Mr. Dukes, you fought with inspiration. We of the Kokurukai salute you.
So you stomped him real good, huh, Frankie?
Worse.
What do you mean?
He made him say Mate.
All right, Frankie.
Ben, pretty cool to see him get the award. You know, very honored, happy to see that Jackson's okay as well. What do you think of this scene?
Well, as you know, like you said, one of the things I love, he's all, this is for you, Shidoshi. You know what I mean? I'm like, but he's not dead.
Right. He's totally fine. Like, he's just chilling in the bed.
Yeah, you know.
Doesn't even look sick.
You know, I know it's for him, but still, he acts like he's dead already.
I feel like he should have been like, this one's for you, Jackson. Like, it would have made more sense at that point because his buddy almost got killed.
Or the girl, or the military, like.
Yeah, I don't know.
I smell a lead into Universal Soldier.
We're in the hospital for the final scene here. Well, final couple scenes. And it's Jackson and Dukes. And he says, hey, next time you fight, try and keep your clothes on. And he hands him over the bandana. And Jackson leans forward and just says, anytime, any place, anywhere. If you need me, I'm there. And Dukes is like, I love you, my friend. And then they hug it out. Dukes sneaks in a kiss. We end with Helmer and Rollins outside the plane waiting for Dukes. And Helmer's just like, he's not coming. He did it to us again. And then Dukes yells out of the plane, hey, you guys coming or what? Horrible ending to the movie. JD, what'd you think about the ending here?
It's a cool little way to tie everything up. Jackson's A-OK.
Sure.
Dukes is still a smug bastard. And, you know, he flies away. He got to have sex with the journalist. Like, everything for him is just fantastic. Like, this was the best weekend of his life.
Yeah, and she's not even going back with him. So he literally just, like, hit it and quit it.
Yeah, and he got to eat good food,
yeah,
play some video games, beat the shit out of a bunch of people. He got a little bloody, but not too bad. And just, you know, got to just embarrass everybody in Hong Kong.
Ben, Bloodsport's 31 years old, man. How has this film aged, in your opinion?
There's goggles. There's blinders on this one. It's perfect still to me. Yeah. It's like the perfect montages, perfect setup, perfect. Like, to me, this is a 5 out of 5. This is the kind of movie that no matter what, look, I have it on DVD and I watch it. I also have it on iTunes. I watch it at the gym. You know, if it's on TV, no matter where it's at, I will sit down and watch it if I don't have nothing to do. You know, I could be like, I make quotes from it. This movie has such an impact for my life growing up that, you know what I'm saying, it does no wrong to me. You know what I'm saying? So I feel it's aged well. I feel you can still get away with a lot of the stuff that it's going on in the movie. But, you know what I'm saying, I've enjoyed this movie since I was a little kid, you know, and it being that old, man, makes me feel old because, fuck, I didn't realize it was that long ago.
Yeah, I think the movie, for the most part, it's aged pretty good. I mean, a lot of it is dated. I mean, the montages can get a little cheesy at times. I mean, there's the Mentos one. It's not great. I will post that on our Twitter so everybody can see that one. I want to talk about the sequel. Have either of you guys ever watched the sequel?
I've watched them all, and no, they're not good.
Not good at all, huh?
At all.
Okay, I thought about trying to find the second one because I know it does bring back Jackson, and then it also has it. Pat Morita from Karate Kid. But you're saying garbage, though.
Yeah, garbage. Don't waste your time. I thought I watched it out of nostalgia, thinking like, yeah. And then I was like, oh.
Okay.
But it happens like that.
All right. Well, Ben, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. Go ahead and plug your podcast and let our listeners know one more time where they can find you.
All right. Well, first of all, let me tell you guys something right now. I enjoy being on this podcast. I'm glad you guys have me on because I listen to you guys every podcast. And I'm going to say right off the top, I don't know how JD gets so fucking close with his fucking, his numbers on his podcast, all right? It just blows my mind sometimes. I'm like, is he just fucking looking and saying it? You know what I'm saying? Because I'm, you know, I feel you're guessing because that's the way you're making it sound. But that's just how I in my head, I'm like, how the fuck are you doing this?
It's legit.
But I've been so wrong sometimes, though.
You have, but sometimes you're like, right the fuck on. I'm like, no fucking way.
Well, I appreciate the love.
It's literally my favorite part of that episode. I love when he does it. I'm like, God.
Yeah.
It's either a train wreck or it's really close. And I'm like, oh, this is awesome.
And I can't wait for it every fucking time.
There you go.
You know, it's the Angry Dad podcast, the Angry Motherfucking Dad. Look, you can find me on fucking iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, fucking Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud. Google Plus is gone, so too fucking bad with that. But, you know, I'm on every fucking social media platform. I'm on IGTV, YouTube, all that fucking shit. And also, too, fucking Monday's a holiday, too motherfucking bad. I don't work on the motherfucking holidays, just like the motherfucking government. They take the day off, I'm taking the fucking day off. That's just how that shit fucking goes.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? But you can find me, Be the Fourth Power, on fucking everything. You know what I'm saying? And my shit's not my shit is not work friendly. So I'm always giving people a heads up on that fucking shit.
Yeah, you probably don't want to play this in an office environment without some headphones on. that may come up bad. I will say this, though, since you compliment our podcast, I listen to your show all the time. A lot of times it's on the way to the gym. So it's either some motivation or some funny shit. Like the episode I listened to last was the one where you're talking about the dude with the shitty breath. That was like a hilarious episode.
Thanks, guys. You know, I appreciate it.
Yeah, but for those of you out there with gingivitis, do better.
Do much better.
There's gum. There's breath mints. Come on. Let's get it together.
Step up again.
So you can subscribe to our podcast, Apple Podcast. Again, if you're on YouTube, click that subscribe button. We're trying to grow that platform. You'll find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're at Back in Time Pod on Twitter. I'm at KAutry29. JD is burping at Unjust Justin. Like us. Retweet us. Send us ideas. backintimepodcast@gmail.com. But for now, it's time to get back into that DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Kumate! See ya!
A-okay, USA.
I debated using that cutout, but I'm gonna do something else instead. And really quick, remember the scene from Bearfest where they're going down the alley drunkenly, and then they make it into the back alley, and then they get to go to Bearfest? Ah, it's totally from Bloodsport.